This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moment of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're getting closer and closer to Christmas. Christmas Eve, Jason Chaffetz at the bottom of the hour. And, of course, your calls. I know you have a lot to say. I said this on social media in the preview before the show. Go to BrianKilmeade.com and comment on what you think's going on. President of the United States. The future president of the United States, a big speech yesterday, gave us a lot to work with. By the way, you can always get the podcast, BrianKilmeadeShow.com, or you could, that's where you listen to it, or wherever you get your podcast, just look for us, and we'll be there. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We then turned to the bipartisan negotiations. The result of it, a really terrific solution, was killed by irresponsible politics.
This is nothing but lies. Nothing but lies. When his lips are moving, he's lying, and he needs to be held accountable.
Yeah, I know. He is the worst ever. Secretary of Homeland Security Mayorkas just making excuse after excuse. And Dom Homan on with us 2 hours ago just clarified. I'll bring this up later. Illegal immigration. We've got the right man in charge now, but the wrong guy was in charge before. We'll talk about it.
Number two.
It's important for us to stay calm. House Republicans will be at 220. We'll be at 215. That's the narrowest majority of any party since 1931.
Right. That is the minority leader, Hakeem Jeffries. Dems in distress. As some show respect, some urge resistance. We will look at their status weeks from a new presidency.
Number one.
If you're rooting against the president, you are rooting against the nation. I'm not ever going to be where I want a president to fail. Country first. I know that's become maybe like a cliche, but it happens to be true.
That is the senator from Pennsylvania. Trump, confident, direct, and impressive in his first major policy speech since winning. We look at his agenda, known and unknown, nothing short of transformational. I'll give you a couple of things I was not expecting. Now, he brought this up on the stump. It does not many people were talking about it. They rather talk about things that he said that they deem controversial. But when he brought up, I want to get an Iron Dome for the country, that's what Rumsfeld was talking about. That's missile defense. Oh, missile defense is a pipe dream. It's going to be too expensive. Do you know anybody who thinks missile defense is not important, like in Israel? Missile defense is not important in Ukraine. Missile defense is not important if you're in the Philippines or Japan or South Korea. Of course it is. Because our enemies got rockets. Now they also have drones, and we got to protect against that. The other thing is Greenland. The president comes out and says, I want Greenland. We're going to talk to Denmark about it. And Panama Canal, you've raised your rates 15% in the last year. We're 75% of all your traffic and your revenue. We'll think we're going to take the Panama Canal back since you're gouging us. Those are things people weren't expecting, but it's game on with President Trump. Also, at the Turning Point meeting yesterday, the guy was totally in his element. To me, he was somebody that can't wait to get started, knows exactly what he's getting at. He's named just about everybody, all these ambassadors too. And for the most part, they want to talk about Musk and Trump. They want to talk about the budget debacle from last week. They want to talk about things that, in my mind, should be fourth or fifth. Number one story is Joe Biden, vacuous for 4 years, invisible, not even playing a role as president most of that time. Even right now, when they had the budget deadlock, Joe Biden is president. Doesn't say a word. They go, his style is to keep hands off. How could you possibly say that? They missed it again. We're about to get a story that's going to be nonstop about people that want to write responsibly about how we did not have a president for 4 years. Remember the biggest story was Woodrow Wilson had a stroke. His wife took over and didn't tell anyone. That is a small story in American history compared to this. Hugh Hewitt was on with me at One Nation over the weekend, and I asked him about the legacy media that they covered for Joe Biden for 4 years. Will it change? Cut seven.
all the new talking points that are going after Elon Musk, it doesn't tell you anything about Trump or Musk. It tells you everything about legacy media and how it works. They get one line of attack, and then they repeat it across every echo chamber inside the blue bubble. By far, Donald Trump is the most accessible president ever for the press. What they don't like to tell people, they don't want to reveal, is that, in fact, he's comfortable in his own skin. He's in command of the room. That first press conference showed it to us. So now they have to find a different target. They've decided to make it Elon Musk. It's not going to work.
It's not going to work either. And by the way, people said, and even Chris Christie, who I think is a great guy, he said that, well, Donald Trump gets tired of people. Not really. And here's the difference. Elon Musk has just so much to offer. The president doesn't need a friend. He needs somebody who's innovative, who's forward-thinking, and might be the smartest man in the world. And that's what he appreciates. But he isn't somebody who sits there with ideas and says things like Stephen Hawking's that are amazing. He's someone that does things. I mean, he'll sit there and sleep on the factory floor. He'll sit there in the control room of after a rocket explodes and stare into the distance and come up with a way to do it and then find other pieces of a rocket, put it back together, and get one back up in the air while sitting in the middle of nowhere in the Marshall Islands. So he's done it all. And then he suggested, remember, it was Elon Musk who suggested on his podcast when he interviewed on X, the president live, the future president live. And he said, I would love to be ahead of government efficiency. And the president said, yeah, go ahead and do it. So John Fetterman is listening to all this, sees what happens in Pennsylvania where he is representing that state that now has a Republican, Dave McCormick, as his companion now, the junior senator. And here's what he said, and I just got to give him so much credit. I think, and Republicans can learn this too, but Senator John Fetterman is just right on the money here, cut five.
I'm not rooting against him. If you're rooting against the president, you are rooting against the nation. And I'm not ever going to be where I want a president to fail. So country first. I know it's become maybe like a cliche, but it happens to be true.
Yeah, country first. And he also talked about when he first stumbled on Trump and what he thought of him. Well, everyone was saying he couldn't win from Jeb Bush on down. When everyone said they laughed at Ann Coulter when she brought it up on the Bill Maher show. He goes, Donald Trump will be the next president. And they all laughed. Or nominee. Didn't even say president. They all laughed. Then when he got to be president, said it was a fluke. John Fetterman says, no, I never thought that. Cut six.
What was the single biggest factor behind Kamala Harris and Democrats losing in November?
You have a singular political talent. It's undeniable.
Trump.
You know, he had the energy and almost a sense of fearlessness to just say all those kinds of things. And people, it's undeniable that it has an entertaining aspect for that, too. And just if you're not afraid to say all of those things, and after you survived an assassination, you literally were shot in your head. Yeah. And had the presence of mind to respond, you know, fight, fight, fight.
That's the type of thing you would expect a Donald Trump staffer to say. So he says, I'm sure he's going to call me. I'm going to work with him when I can. He also says, I met with Pete Hegseth. I met with Elise Stefanik. I met with Kash Patel. And I'll do it again. He says, isn't that my job? Why are people upset about that? I mean, why are people crediting me? Or why is Democrats upset with me? To me, that's what I do. I mean, why wouldn't I? Meanwhile, just to give you an idea, when we come back, I want to talk about this horrific killing on a subway by an illegal immigrant over the weekend and talk about the difference between Mayorkas and Holman and what's it going to mean for the country. But just some other picks. The president is on a breakneck pace to name everybody. Mark Burnett, special envoy to the UK. David Fink, administrator of the Federal Railroad Administration. Aaron Wrights, head of the Justice Department Office of Legal Policy. Tilman Fertitta, good friend of the show. He becomes ambassador to Italy. I mean, the guy's running the Golden Nuggets. He's running the Del Frisco's. He's running the Capitol Grills, as well as the Houston Rockets. And now he's going to go over to Italy. So over the weekend, I asked him, how are you going to do it? And he says, good question. I said, who's going to run your empire? How about this one? Did you see this, Pete? Harrison Butker, the kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs, is now the ambassador to the Vatican. He says he's been a leading voice of the Catholic community, so he's going to go. I mean, that's unbelievable. How is he going to be able to do that? I do not know. So congratulations to him. Katie Miller is going to join Doge. It's going to be good. Now, Ken Howery is going to be ambassador to Denmark. Why does that matter? You know who runs Denmark? Excuse me. You know who runs Greenland? Denmark. The president brought it up, and everyone got mad at him last time, and they laughed at him. Now I think it's real. And Ken Howery, get it done. You're part of the PayPal mafia. We'll also talk to Calista Gingrich, will be ambassador to Switzerland, which is going to be big. He's building out the Defense Department. Elbridge Colby is Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. Michael Duffy, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment. Emil Michael, the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering. Keith Bass, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs. Joe Casper is Chief of Staff of the Secretary of Defense. So this is big. These people are going to be working with Pete, in my view. And Trump's technical team, Bo Hines, Executive Director of the President's Council for Advisors on Digital. Sareem Kashan is a senior advisor on AI. And Michael Krastosis is director of the White House Office of Science and Technology. All these people are going to get an opportunity to do their thing. The president's going to let them go and come up with new ideas and control other people that are there. Yeah, you just put that up for me, right, Pete? So are you for this? You think it's a good move?
Yeah, he was the Chiefs kicker, Butker. He's praising Trump's pick. He's not the ambassador, but he's praising the pick for ambassador.
Oh, he's praising the pick. Okay, so that was my bad.
Let you find it on your own and then figure it out. But yes, he is not the kicker. Is not the ambassador. He's
okay.
Still able to kick.
I was wondering. That kind of threw me for a second. All right. And meanwhile, you expect Eric to correct me on that, but I guess we'll see. Stephen Miriam has previously worked at the Treasury Department. He'll be chair of the White House Council on American Advisors. Bo Hines will be the executive director of the President's Council for Advisors on Digital, too. So we got a lot of great people. And if they're in for the right reasons, it's going to be great. And that's why I believe that you're going to hear from Trump. He's going to be very active. But I don't think he's going to need to speak as much as he used to. I think he's going to have all these people speaking out, like David Sachs, when it comes to Bitcoin, cryptocurrency and AI. Instead of Trump having to speak out about it, the guardrails that are in, the new companies that are launching, the gains that China's making, I want to see David Sachs come out there and say, and who's David Sachs? David Sachs is one of the founders of PayPal. He started three separate billion-dollar companies, all in that realm. So the right people are running things. If they're there for the right reasons, this could be scary great. Donald Trump has gotten people's attention. Donald Trump improved with non-whites by 31% from 100 of non-whites by 31% in 2016, and with white Americans. He improved with African Americans. He improved with Hispanics. He improved with young people. Democrats have ceded this all these areas. The president's going to use that momentum to probably find a way through in the Middle East. I think there's a great opportunity there. Get our economy on track without getting inflation high. The question is, can you get the House to cooperate legislatively? That's going to be the tough part. I don't care who the speaker is, and I hope it remains Speaker Johnson. When we come back, I'll tell you why I believe he keeps it, and it's just practical. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Victims or Villains?
Lyle and Eric Menendez were motivated by greed.
Others have called the brothers arrogant and spoiled.
The reason behind this was financial gain.
Or so it seemed.
These two brothers should be out of prison by now.
I don't see how the years of sexual, physical, and mental abuse amount to life without parole.
Listen and follow starting January 7th at foxtruecrime.com or wherever. Wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I am not a Democrat in the form of what the Democratic Party has turned itself into, the national brand. Absolutely not. The brand got so bad. The D brand has been so maligned from the standpoint of it's toxic. They have basically expanded upon thinking, well, we wanted to protect you there, but we're going to tell you how you should live your life on from that far on.
And I thought that is Joe Manchin exit interview, flipped to an independent after it was all said and done, and Jim Justice already won that seat. But he never lost, by the way. I don't think he's ever lost an election. So Senator Joe Manchin gets out, and the thing is, I'll miss him because he would be the voice of reason or someone that could be won over if a program votes, for example, for oil and gas and drilling or nuclear energy. He's much more practical. He wasn't anti-coal with respect because he knows coal is being burned everywhere. It's in America. We are the Saudi Arabia of coal as well, and China was buying it. So he'd bring things. He was a practical Democrat. That is gone. They're about DEI. They're about green energy. They're about political correctness. And I don't know. They're about anti-Americanism. They're not a pro-American group. They have to change their image or actually change their beliefs. Listen to this Linda Lai. Now, she is a DNC National Finance Committee, and she's extremely upset by the wasted money with the Harris campaign after Trump ran. She came out and was on Fox News Sunday and on this channel and just ripping her party. And listen to how they came back at her. Cut 19.
Honestly, I can't believe I'm sharing this. But the day before my Fox News Sunday interview, somebody from the White House called me. So the White House found out that I was speaking to Shannon Bream. And they called me the night before and said, "You're one of the president's most loyal supporters. We know you're going to stay loyal." And as someone who's watched The Sopranos and is a huge Godfather fan, I mean, it just sounds like something, you know, it just sounded like mob speak almost, like, you know, it's a nice position you have there. It'd be a shame if you lost it, kind of. It was the friendliest threat possible.
I mean, that's what they did. That's what they did to national media that wanted to write about President failing, that you're wrong and you're bitter and you're and we're going to take retribution on you. And that they did that. They intimidated. Chris Caliza said as much when he was with CNN, and I don't know what he's doing now, successful podcaster on the left for the most part. He said, "I really regret not being more candid and giving in to the intimidation that the White House handed out." And guess what? They were run for 4 years, were run by unelected staff of the White House. People say Barack Obama. I have no proof of that. I don't know why he stays in Washington. Who wants to live there in that area? You didn't grow up there. Why wouldn't you go to other places where you can enjoy your life unless you want your hands on and around the levers of power? So this is huge. What is their identity? You tell me. I mean, is it John Fetterman? Is it Joe Manchin? Is it Joe Biden? Kamala Harris? Really? Kamala Harris? And then you're weak on the border. That is really more than anything else why you lost. And then watching Mayorkas yesterday, and I'll play this a little with Jason Chaffetz. Mayorkas says the executive border action that he took was really what slowed everything down to the border to the point where they're right at the levels when they took over during the pandemic. There is so much qualification to that. There's so much further definition needed for that. Tom Homan coming on this morning with me helps me with this, to have one expert answer another expert. But Mayorkas allowed that border to break. He allowed people to flood in. And then when he was asked, he says the border is secure. A lie. Didn't build the wall. Says we didn't need it. Border, the walls don't work. A lie. Now he says the numbers are down. It is a lie because the numbers are down at the border, but not illegals being into this country because of this app where you get on and log on and say you're want a refugee status. You get flown in, if you provide the money, into the city of your choice. So you say, well, they didn't cross the border. Man, they flew over the border. That's what happened. Jason Chaffetz next. We have so much to talk about. So glad you're here. Then your calls and emails, 1-866-408-7669.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We then turned to Congress, and we asked for supplemental funding that was desperately needed to make our administration of a broken immigration system work much better. Mm-hmm. We were denied. We then turned to the bipartisan negotiations, which proved successful, which were then killed. The result of it, a really terrific solution, was killed by irresponsible politics.
Alejandro Mayorkas, one of the biggest failures as a cabinet secretary in American history. Not that the president would know, because he was only met with them 9 times. He probably needed a photo of him to pick him out. But man, was he horrific. He went on. Cut 24.
Looking back now in hindsight, 2020, if we had known that irresponsible politics would have killed what was clearly a meritorious effort and a meritorious result, perhaps we would have taken executive action more rapidly.
So he is blaming the lack of congressional action for the lack of action he was able to do at the border, as if Congress were the ones who had to close the border. No, yeah, comprehensive immigration reform done the right way, of course, is the goal. But it didn't stop him from doing his job and enforcing the laws on the books. Jason Chaffetz knows all about it. Fox News contributor, former Oversight Committee chairman. Jason, your reaction to the excuses?
Oh, he is so full of crap. I got to tell you, look, I was on Judiciary, I was on the Immigration Subcommittee. There is nobody who has done his job worse than Alejandro Mayorkas. He did not follow the law. He did not enforce the current law. I thought he should have been impeached. For him to blame Congress and, oh, there wasn't this action, is just a total... I mean, it's so infuriating because they literally opened the borders, created the rewards and incentives. People were brought in here. They flew them in by the tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. They moved them around the country. They went before the American people and said, hey, the border isn't a problem. It's safe, secure. We have operational control. That was a lie.
Why did Margaret Brennan not say that yesterday? Why not just come out and just say, but you told us for 2.5 years the border was secure.
Yeah, they said they didn't need anything. And remember, Democrats had the House, the Senate, and the presidency the first 2 years of the Biden administration. So don't be blaming Republicans when all of a sudden you now have almost a murder, it seems like, every day of somebody who's here illegally killing somebody else.
You listen to this on Kids, cut 27.
The incoming border czar, Tom Homan, says these children are being exploited and trafficked. Is that true?
Well, Margaret, we certainly have received reports of children being trafficked, even those as to whom we know where they are. That is outside the responsibility of the Department of Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. What we do is we turn children over within 72 hours, as the law requires, to the Department of Health and Human Services, and then HHS places those children. Of course, we investigate cases of trafficking. But there are children who are reunited with a parent here in the United States or a legal guardian, and they move. And sometimes the government loses track. Individuals do not comply with their reporting obligations or otherwise. I think it is inaccurate to say that all of them are trafficked or victimized.
He is trying to use the legalese to parse his way through it. That is far short of the full set of facts on how this works. They literally are hundreds of thousands of kids that have come here illegally and now have been put into places in homes. We don't know who these people are. We don't know where they are. Tom Homan has highlighted this time and time again. These poor kids, we have no idea what is happening to them. And don't blame it on Health and Human Services. I mean, he is part of the chain of custody here.
Absolutely.
That perpetuated this problem, created this incentives, and who knows where all these kids are.
So, Jason, you remember they talked about the child separation policies of Donald Trump that lasted maybe 2 weeks. And they said, well, it's, you know, politically this is a problem, but they're trying to use it as a deterrent. That was her premise of the question. Have you ever found out why is it so hard to find the parents of the kids that Donald Trump separated? You really think that's the story 4 years later, that brief period of time, as opposed to what we're witnessing, 300,000 we can't track?
I mean, just late last week, we saw this story. I think the kid's age was like 5 or so, really couldn't even speak English, had a note in his pocket saying, yeah, hey, send me here to somewhere. And I mean, these are sad, horrific stories, but the Biden administration's policies have exacerbated this.
And it's part of the reason why they lost and their party is rudderless. And, you know, until and the one you have the senator from Arizona now who wants to come out and say we're working on a bipartisan solution with Republicans. Where's he been?
Just shut up about that stuff. You know, look, how about all these sanctuary cities, states out there that won't cooperate with ICE? You have people that are committing crimes, that are alleged to have committed crimes. Why not cooperate with ICE and communicate with them so they can actually do their job and get these people deported?
So here's what Tom Holman said when I played that for him. Cut 40, cut 25.
It's nothing but lies. Nothing but lies. Border numbers aren't down. They're just putting them through the CBP One app and the CHNV app. You add those programs together, what Border Patrol's catching in the gotaways, we still have historic numbers. They were bragging the other day that ICE has over 247,000 removals, the most in a decade. No, they don't. If you look at the data, 80% of them were Border Patrol apprehensions that ICE just simply put across the border. ICE interior enforcement numbers are historic lows. And as far as the children, another lie. Under his guidance, under his leadership, first of all, it's his policies that caused over 500,000 of children being smuggled in this country, trafficking this country, and they lost track with 340,000 of them. His lips are moving, he's lying, and he needs to be held accountable.
He does. I don't know how they're going to do that, but
there are 1.4 million people here illegally that were ordered by a federal judge to leave the country and didn't. 1.4 million.
I know.
And anyway, you come in here illegally, then you ignore a federal judge. That's the way you're going to operate in this country. And then we're surprised if they commit other crimes. Are you kidding me?
I watched you last night. You know this story. New York Post reporting on the cover. This Guatemalan who has at least one previous arrest in Arizona. He's on a subway, 7:30 in the morning, sees a woman sleeping and lights her on fire. She burns alive. And he sits down and watches the whole thing. Big pictures of him, and they were able to track him down through high school age kids. Said this is the guy. Helped the cops get him. This woman died horrifically in a horrible, painful death. They arrest this guy. He doesn't belong here. Another horrific crime. The governor puts out a statement saying that how safe the subway is now that we have National Guards people on there and we have more cameras. I mean, can you be that much of a knucklehead?
She defies all explanations. Hours after this happens, she comes out and tells us how safe the subways are. I saw you on Fox and Friends this morning, and I thought one of the good points that come out of this is, why is he even down on the subway anyway? Do we think he actually bought a ticket and was sitting down there? No, this is, again, it's just day after day after day. People don't feel safe because they're not safe. We've got hundreds of thousands of unaccompanied minors. We don't know where they are. You've got people that are raped coming across the border and trafficked. We have a major, major problem. And what did the Democrats say? Well, it was the Republican. We have to pass a piece of legislation to do our jobs. That is not right. It's one of the key reasons why Donald Trump is going to be the president.
No question. So it happened early Sunday morning. This guy is from Guatemala. And here's the exact quote that Kathy Hochul puts out. In March, I took action to make our subway safer for millions of people who take the trains each day. Since deploying the National Guard to support New York NYPD and the MTA, safety records and adding cameras to subway cars, crime is down and ridership is going up. Excuse me, did you even mention the guy on fire, the guy that put this woman on fire? Did you mention the horrific crime and then say something that stupid? So this, to me, was maybe a time statement, but is nobody that pulled it back and said, excuse me, we did not know of the incident. Then you'd say, well, that's bad staffing, but she still hasn't pulled it back yet.
Well, I have something in common with the governor, and that is I don't ride the subway, and she's not riding it either. She obviously has no idea how bad, how unsafe it is. And I don't understand how she's even, I mean, they should have picked Lee Zeldin, for goodness sake. This would not be an issue with Lee Zeldin.
I know. We'll see what's next. This guy, Richie Torres, sees an historic opportunity. He's a congressman from Queens. He says, I don't know if I want to be mayor or governor, but both should be open. He sounds like a Republican. And that's, even though he's not, do you know him?
I don't know if he served at the same time. No, I don't know him.
He's been all over this, and you know, with Adams's problems,
right?
And then Governor Hochul just being she never should be governor. She was put in there to seal up Buffalo for Cuomo.
That's right.
Cuomo never even knew her. Not that Cuomo would know talent if he saw it, but she wasn't even established. Now she has this job. Just awful.
She's in so over her head.
Listen, I'm going to take a time out. When we come back, I'm going to talk to Jason Chaffetz a little bit more about what's going on here, as well as the president's speech yesterday. That was brilliant.
It was great.
And you know what I like? New stuff. Policies no one's thinking of. Okay, good idea. Space Force. Where did that come from? Great idea now, right?
Right.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Has anyone ever heard of the Panama Canal? Because we're being ripped off at the Panama Canal like we're being ripped off everywhere else. If the principles, both moral and legal, of this magnanimous gesture of giving are not followed, then we will demand that the Panama Canal be returned to the United States of America in full, quickly, and without question. I'm not going to stand for it.
So this is part of the speech where I thought, I'm paying attention, whether it's the Iron Dome for the country, which Rumsfeld wanted. They said the technology wasn't there. And now look at South Korea, look at what's happening with what did Israel was able to do, much smaller countries, obviously. All right, that's forward thinking. And then he says the Panama Canal. Jason Chaffetz is here. In the last 12 months through September, the canal's revenue rose 15% to nearly $5 billion, even though the tonnage shipped through the canal fell 1.5%. So they say that water is down, forced low water levels have forced officials to slash the number of ships that are allowed through the canal, disrupting global supply chains and pushing up the costs. Trump's not buying that. Are you, Jason?
I'm not buying it. Look, what I is just in awe of President Trump is his mastery of such a wide array of issues. Who would have brought this up? I mean, the guy hasn't even been sworn in and he's starting to. And what he's doing is he's a master negotiator, right? He's negotiating by taking a tough stance against Panama. I read in some of the research here that Panama is charging anywhere between 50 cents and $300,000 per ship that's moving through this canal. We move probably the majority, if not the plurality, of goods through that Panama Canal, including so much of our troops and our military uses this. I can't even imagine how big the number is for the United States. And let me also say, Brian, the brilliance of Donald Trump putting in the Space Force, thank goodness he had, because I can tell you, having seen some of this back when I was in Congress, there is essentially a war going on in space as we speak. Donald Trump understood this. He took the political capital to put it into place. And there is a fight that is going on right now in space, and we're winning it.
Absolutely. As president, the Panama president said this. As president, I want to express clearly that every square meter of the Panama Canal and its adjacent zone belong to Panama and will continue to do so. The sovereignty and independence of our country are not negotiable. The canal is not under direct or indirect control, neither by China, nor by the European community, nor by the United States, nor by any power. As a Panamanian, I strongly reject any manifestation that distorts this reality. Panama respects the other nations and demands respect. And then Trump says it was given to Panama and the people of Panama, but it has provisions. You've got to treat us fairly, and they haven't treated us fairly.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump's pretty straight up about that. And now what he's done is he focused all the attention. We're going to go in and dive in there because their allegations are that the Chinese are very close to manipulating that. And if you're the Chinese, you probably would be doing that. So, again, applause to Trump for being on top of it. And among all the other things out there, in awe that he does this.
So Ken Howery is part of the PayPal mafia. And he is going to be the ambassador to Denmark. Why does the ambassador to Denmark matter?
Well, it matters because of the polar. You know, our globe is a globe. And if you look north and if you look to Greenland and Iceland and all of that and what the Russians are doing up top, I'm telling you, it is a big, big issue.
So we want Greenland. And there's only 50,000 people on Greenland right now. And there's only certain areas that are inhabitable. But we could use it as a military base. Why, you know, why should Denmark have Greenland? I mean, come on, what was it, 1780? So we should just take it, shouldn't we?
I don't know if I'd advocate to go so far as to just take it, but boy, we could buy it. We could certainly take it over if we wanted to. But again, you've got to think of the long-term interest in the United States of America. Would it be better? Would the world be safer with it? Yes. But we got to be, you know, how we acquire it, now that's up for discussion.
All right, so let's talk about this. Miranda Devine writes about the story in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times last week that Joe Biden has not been present. Mentally, he can't do it. Bad days, he's invisible, right. Never meets with his cabinet, doesn't set policy. It's basically run by staffers. So she writes, Biden held just 9 cabinet meetings compared to Trump's 25. The Wall Street Journal says the White House aides secretly rescheduled national security briefings. Secretary Defense Austin, and in the past 2 years, we have 2 wars, and he has not met with the president about Afghanistan. He stopped trying. This guy, this is the biggest scandal in our lifetime. And do you believe it's going to get bigger?
I do. I think more will be exposed the moment Biden leaves. I think it's going to be a story about 4 years of cognitive decline and problems. And it begs the question, who was actually running things? Who was signing things? Who are making the statements? I mean, we could see it before our own eyes, but to suggest that this is going on for 4 years, I think it's even worse behind the scenes. And shame on the people who saw this day in and day out. Jill Biden, the family, the cabinet.
Chris Coons. Who's lying about it now.
Yeah. Oh, I have only saw him at the debate. That's when I realized there might have been a problem.
I didn't hang out with him.
Yeah.
So NSC officials are disputing the Daily Mail story that Biden kept the grieving relatives of the Marines killed in Afghanistan waiting for 3 hours while he took a nap. However, no one's budging from the story. This is what they are coming out to say. According to the sister of Riley McCollum, one of the men who died, Biden made us wait for 3 hours to receive the bodies of our dead family members because he couldn't pull it together. Christy Shamblin, the mother-in-law of the Marine Sergeant Nicole Gee, who died, and Darren Hoover, the father of Taylor Hoover, who were killed in the Cabo blast, told the Daily Mail that their families were also left waiting on the tarmac. We sat in that office for what seemed like an eternity waiting for the doddering old fool, Hoover said. Obviously, he's angry. The president went on to check his watch during the handover, the dignified transfer.
I mean, we got upset when Bill Clinton got a haircut at LAX and people had to wait. This was 3 hours for people who lost their loved ones.
So he could nap on Air Force One?
Who naps for 3 hours?
Guy can't do the job. It was unbelievable what's taking place. And everyone who covered from the vice president on down should be done. Jason Chaffetz, see you on Outnumbered.
Thank you.
Are you going to play the man in the middle?
I'm going to try.
You can. I believe in you. Don't move.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. We're here at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. So much going on. Great holiday season. I imagine for retailers, I like to see the numbers, but just ugly. Another subway crime that goes beyond comprehension. You have an illegal immigrant just light somebody on fire who is napping on the subway. That's what we wake up to on Sunday, 3 days before Christmas. And now we're on the new Christmas Eve. This hour, we're going to have editor of NASA Watch, Keith Cowing, will be here. We'll talk about what's going to happen as we try to get these Boeing astronauts out of space and we try to see what SpaceX can do from here. Also, Michael Goodwin standing by, and we'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We then turned to the bipartisan negotiations. The result of it, a really terrific solution, was killed by irresponsible politics.
It's nothing but lies. Nothing but lies. When his lips are moving, he's lying, and he needs to be held accountable.
That is Mayorkas and Tom Homan. Obviously, I side with Homan because he's in reality. Illegal immigration. We have the right man in charge right now, and the guy he's about to replace is oblivious to the error of his ways and another legal immigrant caught doing something horrific.
Number two.
It's important for us to stay calm. House Republicans will be at 220. We'll be at 215. That's the narrowest majority of any party since 1931.
Dems in distress, as some show respect. Some urge resistance. We will look at their status weeks from a new president.
Number one.
If you're rooting against the president, you are rooting against the nation. I'm not ever going to be where I want a president to fail. Country first. I know that's become maybe like a cliche, but it happens to be true.
It is true. Thanks so much, Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania. Trump, confident, direct, impressive in his first major policy speech since winning. We look at his agenda, known, and the new stuff that we got yesterday. Nothing short of transformational in many ways. Michael Goodwin joins us now. Michael, I love the topic. You're talking about Hyde and Biden and what the mental decline is, and the biggest story to yet to be written is that maybe he's made almost no decisions over the last 4 years. But I got to ask you about what John Fetterman just said. That's heartening to hear. And I know he believes it.
No, good morning, Brian. Look, I agree. I mean, Fetterman is a breath of fresh air. Unfortunately, he's so rare in the Democratic Party. I mean, what you have, for example, just before that, you played the Hakeem Jeffries statement, 220 to 215. The implicit thing he's saying there is, we will not give them a single vote on anything. They're going to have to unite the Republican caucus to get anything through the House. So they start out on that foot, which unfairly is happening in both parties now. There is a kind of hard line, particularly in the House. The Senate, it's more likely to have Republican senators wavering and voting with Democrats. But I think Republicans need to follow the Democratic rule if they're going to get anything done, which is that you stick together, because otherwise you are not going to get anything done in the House. And that's what the Democrats want. They want the Republican president and the Republican House, Republican Senate to fail. And that will happen if Republicans don't swallow some things they don't agree with, but go along with for the bigger picture. Now, there's a way to negotiate. There's a way to soften some of the things you don't agree with. But if you're just going to vote no because you don't get what you want, then you're going to have a stalemate, which will be to the benefit of Democrats and to the detriment of the country.
Here's more from Fetterman. Cut five.
I'm not rooting against him. If you're rooting against the president, you are rooting against the nation. And I'm not ever going to be where I want a president to fail. So country first. I know that's it's become maybe like a cliche, but it happens to be true.
So I have great hope for him. He's also said Lee Stefanik got his vote. He was impressed with Kash Patel, and he said, I didn't know his background, his immigrant background, and now I know. And Pete Hegseth, it was interesting talking to him, but what do I know in 30 minutes? I'll have to see more, but he's open to it. And everybody loves Rubio, so there's no doubt about it. So I want to talk to you about the most underreported story. I could not believe not one show took this on over the weekend. The story written in the Wall Street Journal that Joe Biden has been invisible for 4 years. Good days, bad days. Adam Smith couldn't reach him to warn him about what could go wrong with the Afghanistan withdrawal. I mean, you can't overstate how big a story this is.
Brian, that's why I wrote about it. It is earth-shattering what the Journal uncovered. And it's earth-shattering in part because nobody else did it. Why did nobody else do this? And don't forget, the Journal did a story in June, before the debate, saying that people who had seen Biden came away thinking that he had really slipped. His cognitive capacity had slipped. And nobody followed that story up. Then comes the late June debate, and the whole country saw what was happening, how he couldn't string together a sentence, how he trailed off into incoherence, how he looked like a ghost. That's what the Journal was talking about in early June. Fast forward, so nothing else happens, right? The campaign, he's pulled from the campaign. Harris gets the nomination, but everything continues apace until The election is over, and now this story comes out from the Journal. There's absolutely no follow-up by any other media. As you say, it's not discussed on the Sunday shows. It's like it never happened. But the impact is extraordinary. We have a president who has been so incapacitated that his staff will not let him talk to his own cabinet in many cases. They don't do cabinet meetings. He can't talk to legislators. It's all through intermediaries. And this is the president. So the question then, of course, becomes even sharper. Who's making the decisions? Who's running the White House? Who decided to commute these murderer sentences? These capital cases. Who is doing
In case you don't know, people
and
at home.
No curiosity from the media.
There were 37 prisoners on death row. 34 have had their sentences changed to life as Biden gets set to go visit the Pope. Wood's been doing everything. Who came up with the 1,500 commutations and the multiple pardons? Who's been doing anything when it comes to Israel policy?
I was just going to say foreign policy, domestic policy, right? This has been going on for almost all of the term. So it's clearly gotten worse. We've seen him get worse in public, but why we don't see him more often is because they are hiding him. They don't want the country to know. Now think of all the people, Brian, in the White House, in the government who know these things. What does Christopher Wray know? What does Merrick Garland know? What does Lloyd Austin know? Remember Lloyd Austin went to the hospital and Biden didn't even know about it? Nobody knew about it? I mean, that's the way they're operating, almost like in silos, that there is no real White House. There is no real commander-in-chief. And what about Kamala Harris? She was out there saying continually that he's fine, he's great, he runs circles around young people. It's all a lie. And so why hasn't the media covered it? And that, to me, is a kind of bigger but separate question.
How about
everybody is responsible for their own role in this. But the media, which is the role to inform the public, where's the New York Times? Where's the Washington Post? Where's McClatchy? Where are all the people who were so hot for Russia, Russia, Russia? Where are they about Joe Biden's unfitness?
How about it didn't even change over the weekend? It didn't even change on Friday. KJP meets with the press. Not one question about the Wall Street Journal story that shows the president's basically a corpse. Chris Kaliza feels bad about what he missed. He said this.
And I probably should have pushed harder on the Biden age stuff. Because in retrospect, it's clear that the people close to him knew that at best, he had some good days and some bad days. And again, I don't put it just on myself or just on journalists, because I know journalists did ask, and I can tell you, I mean, I know from my experience, there was a shame factor that went into that.
He went on.
That's a
journalist, and I put myself here, you've got to, we should have been pushier. I don't want to speak for everyone, I should have not let the shame campaign to make you feel bad for asking the question get to me. Because it's now clear from both the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times piece that there was real deterioration and significant decline in Joe Biden, and that it was being managed by the people around him. They were insulating him. They were keeping sort of the world, the political world out, and keeping him sort of bunkered in.
They wouldn't put any bad articles in front of him or any bad polls in front of him either.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. You know, Brian, students of history will recall that there was essentially a blackout on photographs or any articles about FDR being on crutches and really not being able to use his legs. And there was a book written about it some years ago called The Splendid Deception. And it was that this was the times that the people did not want to see their president as physically crippled, although FDR was sharp as a tack mentally, but even the physical part of it. was hidden from the public. And now here we have all these years later where the press would scoff at that, they wouldn't do that. They've done something far worse. They've covered up the fact that a president's mental faculties are shot and that he's not fit to be. This is not someone who can't just walk. This is someone who can't talk, who can't think, who can't reason, who can't remember. And the press did nothing about it. But I thought what Saliza said there was fascinating. I hadn't heard that part before about the shame factor. And that is the whole thing of a herd mentality, that if you're covering the White House, you don't want to get too far apart from your colleagues from other news outlets, because they'll treat you as though you've broken the code, you've broken the deal. And that's what it takes to be a really good journalist. You have to be willing to cause a stink. You have to be willing to be an outcast. Apparently nobody there was for almost 4 years until the Wall Street Journal did it.
So yesterday the president gave a real good speech, had Ted Cruz and others. Tom Homan spoke. Rachel Marin, whose daughter was murdered, spoke and came up and talked about what Donald Trump looked at me, not like a president, but like a father and a grandfather. I mean, the humanization of Donald Trump is happening and no one can stop it. And here's something else I always like that Trump brings up, something I wasn't expecting. Cut two.
Has anyone ever heard of the Panama Canal? Because we're being ripped off at the Panama Canal like we're being ripped off everywhere else. If the principles, both moral and legal, of this magnanimous gesture of giving are not followed, then we will demand that the Panama Canal be returned to the United States of America in full, quickly, and without question. I'm not going to stand for it.
And what they've done is they jacked up their rates over the last year, especially sometimes much as 15%. He said, why are we paying these rates? And there's rumors that China's really running things. Your thoughts?
Well, what struck me at first, of course, you hear it, it's like, oh, it's a crazy idea. And then you hear the facts that it's about the charges and they're ripping America off. And it struck me that what he's doing is he's negotiating. Right? He's negotiating the same way he's negotiating with tariffs on Canada and China and everywhere. This is how he negotiates. And it's if you don't give us at least something of what we want, we're going to go for the whole thing. And it works. It works because of the United States power and using United States power, even if it's just the power of jawboning, even if it's just the power of our huge economy. It works because we have been ripped off, and it's just like NATO, right? I don't think he ever really intended to drop out of NATO, but it was a threat, and it got their attention, and they paid more, and it's going to have to happen again. This is the way Donald Trump negotiates. He's a very effective negotiator. It doesn't mean you always – in fact, it's a defeat to a certain extent if you have to carry out the threat. What you really want is just a fair deal for the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Read his stuff in the New York Post, and the news is not stopping because the holidays are here, so we'll continue at it. Michael, thanks so much for everything this year, too.
My pleasure, Brian, and Merry Christmas.
Same to you. We come back, your calls, 1-866-408-7669, and then we talk to Keith Cowing, editor of NASA Watch, the president-elect Donald Trump's pick for NASA administrator. By the way, it's a tech billionaire, and you'll really like hearing from him.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I am not a Democrat in the form of what the Democratic Party has turned itself into, the national brand. Absolutely not. The brand got so bad. The D brand has been so maligned from the standpoint of it's toxic. They have basically expanded upon thinking, well, we wanted to protect you there, but we're going to tell you how you should live your life from that far on.
So that's what he feels, and that's why he's getting out. And I went to the Army-Navy game 2 weeks ago or last weekend, and Joe Manchin was in the box. He said, you know, I wasn't invited, but I knew I was there, and they invited me in. So I said hello to everybody. I'm sure he talked to Trump, who was there. Tulsi Gabbard was there. Pete Hegseth was there. Congressman Mooser of Pennsylvania was there. Of course, Urban Meyer, Mark Levin. And he was one of the people there. So I just think that he's very, I mean, he's a young 74. So this guy is in fantastic shape. And I think that if he could play a role, I think he should. I think the president should find something for him. Hank writes me and says this: I'm listening to your radio show. After everything that's come out this week, there should be a freeze on any executive action that Biden proposes, right? He is waiving more student debt, selling the wall, the pardons, the list goes on. Is there any legal action you could take? I don't think there's any legal action unless you can find a way to prove that he's not there. This is right now reporting, and sadly, most of the stuff that we see is hearsay. Which brings me to another email that says that Barack Obama, every former president leaves. LBJ went to Texas. So did George W. Bush. H.W. Bush went to Texas, too. Then you have Bill Clinton went back to Arkansas and then New York. Why does Barack Obama stay in Washington? Why is he still there? In the beginning, they said, well, he wants his kids to finish school. Well, they're done. I don't know why anyone would choose to continue to live there, especially because his wife, Michelle Obama, doesn't like it. It doesn't like politics. So why are you there? Big question. And as long as you have a president functioning as little as inefficiently as this president, it's always going to be a question.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
But we're going to go to the moon, and that means we're going to need guardians that are there looking out for us. And the same when we're, you know, 6-9 months away out on Mars and then progress on from beyond that. So I think it's inevitable that this is, you know, this trajectory that humankind is going to follow. America is going to lead it, and we're going to need guardians there on the high ground looking out for us.
And that is President-elect Donald Trump's pick for NASA administrator, and that is tech billionaire Jared Isaacman. Joining us now is Keith Cowing, editor of NASA Watch. Keith, great to see you. Thanks for joining us on Skype.
Yep. Happy to be here.
Hey, Keith, do you like this election?
Jared Isaacman? Yes, I do. Full stop.
I mean,
he's been there, done that. He's done everything. He's paid for rockets. He knows what they cost. So
you feel like he could be a bridge between what NASA needs and what the private sector needs, whether it's Blue Origin or SpaceX?
I do. And I think what you're seeing here with the Trump folks, and I'm saying this as a Democrat, Democrats never really get NASA and space. They try to, but they don't. It always seems to be the Republican administrations that come up with the best leaders and so forth. The last one we had was Jim Bridenstine. And I think other than the guy who's there now, who's part of the problem we have with NASA, that I think there'll be a baton passed over him to Isaacman, and I really think he'll hit the ground running.
All right. First off, can I ask you what happened with Boeing? You know, Boeing goes up there. They're unsure about their rockets. The rocket comes down. It ends up being okay. But their astronauts are going to be up there for another few months?
Yeah, the whole idea here was actually kind of interesting. Back when we lost Columbia, the folks said, well, how are we going to, we don't really want to depend on the Russians to get to our big space station. So they said, well, go out to the commercial sector. And they ended up picking two companies, SpaceX and Boeing. They gave them a few $1 billion. SpaceX hit the ground running. They came up with a spacecraft that could deliver groceries or people or both. No problems other than a small few things that they did. Nobody got hurt, no risks. Boeing took longer, got more money. They were, you know, leading in the we've built these things before sort of mantra when, okay, well, it's been 50 years and all those guys are dead. And when they did launch it the first time, it didn't know what time it was. And then it went up a second time and it had problems maneuvering itself. And when they threw it the third time, you'd think they'd have these problems solved, but they don't. And it seems to be every time they have a problem, they find new problems and they come back. So the logic was to have a backup in case one didn't work. Well, it the logic to that was useful because we still have SpaceX if Boeing goes away. And there are other companies that are lining up to possibly take their space. But as far as the guys who are up there, I know one of them, Sonny Williams, and they're troopers. And, you know, if you said, hey, you got to spend another couple of weeks in outer space, they'd be, yeah, outer space. So I don't think there's a problem there, but I think they do want to get home because they got a lot of Christmas presents. They're going to be waiting to be opened.
Female is losing a lot of weight, the female astronaut. Is that a concern? And why do you think that's happening?
I don't think she's – I've known her for 25 years. That's Sunny. Maybe she wanted to darken the hair a bit, but I don't think that that's a story that somebody looked at one picture and just said, well, whatever. No, she's fine. Trust me. She's fine.
All right. So how – well, what should be the objective? Like, where does NASA come in and where does SpaceX come in? Like, what is – I know you guys working together. One couldn't do one without the other. But could you tell me how what would be the perfect breakdown between the private and NASA?
Well, right now, everybody has asked that question, which is the best question, and we always try and give an answer. And that is that you let NASA go do the groundbreaking exploring stuff and figure out how to do it for the first time. And then once they got that, hand it off to the private sector, which is kind of what they did. You see this giant SpaceX rocket and Blue Origin's New Glenn, the big rockets. The basics of that came from NASA. The trick is they can use the private sector, consumer-oriented product improvement. I don't care if it blows up because I got more of them sort of thing. And they improve very quickly. Whereas with NASA, they have a rocket that Bill Nelson and others from the Senate mandated use old 70s, you know, rocket parts from the shuttle. And it's just over budget and so forth. So it's a clear demonstration of when the government oversteps and overspecifies something. Mm-hmm. When they can just say, I want to order a bunch of these, you guys figure out how to do it. And that's, we have evidence thereof. In every 3 or 4 weeks, Elon launches another big corn silo into space.
So here's Jared Isaacman on what his objective is if he gets this job, and I'm sure he's going to get it. Cut 39.
I love all about commercial space industry right now. Just to point out, they are all generally doing the same thing, which is putting a lot of their own dollars on the line because they believe in the future that it holds. There's so much uncertainty around it too, right? Like there will almost assuredly be some space economy that's up there, and then we're going to need a lot of people in this room to protect it when it fully develops. But yeah, I mean, Blue Origin's putting a ton of their own money that, on the line. Love everything that Rocket Lab did is like, another small scrappy startup that's doing great things. And for sure, SpaceX and their approach of like fully reusable first and second stage, pretty awesome stuff.
Yeah. So I think he seems to get it.
Yeah, he does. And the interesting thing is, you know, Elon Musk was sort of like Mercedes-Benz. They gave away the airbag patent and he gave away a lot of electric car patent. And the idea is, all right, Elon, you got competitors, and he's sitting there saying, yeah, I got competitors because I helped create the industry. That spawns more competitors, which helps get the demand going. And it's the classic rising tide lifts all boats. So companies will fail, others will merge, and others will succeed. And I'll be honest with you, the company that's really going to change the exploration of space hasn't been built yet.
Really?
It's waiting. There's some kid in college is going to figure that out.
Right. But right now, why do you think it's taken so long to get to the moon where we did it in the late 60s?
You know what? I was bored yesterday on Twitter. I put something up where I had Wright Brothers, 1903, Apollo 11, 1969. I saw that. Not the first, the second. Then I put Apollo 11, 1969, and then a picture of the Apollo 11 landing site, 2024, just sitting there. And, that was 20 years after World War II. I grew up then, and my dad would talk about World War II. We didn't know any better than to take a lot of risks and have a unified national commitment. But whereas now we're like, about everything, regardless of your party affiliation. And, if you ask about China, I'm not here to defend them, but they have a plan. And they're following it, and they're meticulous about it, and they put the resources in there that needs to be done. Russia's is collapsed because of a variety of things, and we're somewhere in between where we get that the private sector can go and do this stuff for us, but we don't fully commit to it. And it often gets flipped. Like during the Obama era, they were pushing for more commercial space, and the Republicans were pushing for the big SLS rocket. Well, Elon is launching these big rockets now because of the commercial stuff. And the SLS goes every couple of years and costs a fortune and, all that. So it's a very strange dynamic that's going on. And I wish people would just pick one path and go with it.
Are we at war with China in space?
No. This is a multipolar world now. We're in conflict, competition, collaboration, and whatnot with everybody simultaneously. It's not, you know, us versus the Ruskies back in the day. And, you know, I think China is one step away from wanting to collaborate, and they wanted to join our space station. We said no, so they built their own. We, you know, I remember back in the 70s when we were going to fly an Apollo mission with the Russians. It was like, oh, no, they'll steal our secrets. Well, they didn't. And then when I was working on a space station, they say, oh, I got to bring the Russians in. Oh, no, they'll steal our secrets. Well, here we are. We are not getting along with Russia. In space, other than trivial little things, for a quarter of a century, that is a unified crew up there. So there's something about space, about the adventure, the collaboration, the more countries, the better, that sort of lets us keep the bad aspects of our nature kind of back on Earth. Maybe not forever, but it certainly is a dampening thing. And, you know, if there are Chinese astronauts on a space station with Americans and Russians, I don't think they're going to want to shoot at it. Do you?
True. I would say this. So I hear that China might want to start claiming the moon as their own or portions of the moon. And there might be some metals up there that might benefit. And that's what, yeah. Have you heard that?
That's what Bill Nelson says. And the funny thing is, if you look at the Chinese plan, they're not going to the South Pole of the moon early. They're going later. And when they do, we're talking about a piece of land that's the size of North America. All right. And if there are water deposits there, which is what they're after, they're in a vast area. And it's not like, what are they going to do when you land? Is this going to be like the TV show where they pull out the rifle? I mean, there's this sort of illogic to this. And I think a lot of it is just meant, if he didn't say that, maybe we might have one less issue with China. If we didn't just say these goofy things about, you know, China taking over the South Pole of the moon. Well, we'll take over the North Pole. I mean,
You don't buy it. So Jared Isaacman came out and talked about the future of the Polaris program. Cut 42.
You know, the future of the Polaris program is a little bit a question mark at the moment. It may wind up on hold for a little bit. We'll have to see. But overall, I'm just like super passionate about, you know, humankind's future among the stars and what's approaching, because it's going to be a lot. It's going to arrive a lot quicker than probably many of us think.
What's the objective of the Polaris program?
Well, first of all, he's another rich guy who read too much science fiction and didn't know any better than to try and make it real. And he did. And he bought flights from Elon. He went and became a pilot and so forth. He's doing it because he can, and nobody can stop him. And I don't mean that in a
negative
bad
way.
Yeah. It's just, you know, you've got a lot of Richard Branson and the balloon flying around the world. I mean, there's a lot of you say, hey, I can do this. And then, of course, you throw all the sponsorships. And he did something for St. Jude, which raised a pile of money. So, nice. You know, at the end of the day, you know, seriously. But, Keith, you know.
Yeah, I have to hold you there. We're up against a break. Keith Cowan, thanks so much. A good time to be in space. Don't move.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney and Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm going to be with, going to go on Stuart Varney's show in just a matter of moments, and we'll talk about what's happening. By the way, I'm going to go over it shortly. I couldn't read it. I'm back from break. But the ethics report on Matt Gaetz is now out, and we'll see what it says. I mean, how bad can it be? We hear drugs and underage women. Does it get worse than that? I don't know. So we'll see where that stands and who's going to be involved. And so we'll take a look at that ethics report. I'm going to be on the 5 today. We'll talk about it, I'm sure. And I'm also going to be.
Welcome back, everybody. The market's moving.
I'm also going to be on Jesse Waters' show. But let's
trading.
Listen.
But guess
listen
what? It's right around 10:51 on the East Coast. That means that Brian Kilmeade joins us now. Great to have him along. Brian, we have to warn our viewers that this upcoming video is graphic. We're only going to show it once. It was a man who was arrested after allegedly setting fire to a sleeping subway passenger in New York City, killing the innocent woman. Now, multiple sources say he entered the country illegally in 2018 and was deported. He then snuck back into the U.S. and was living at a shelter in New York City. I mean, what's your reaction to that, Brian?
I mean, a couple of things. 7:30 in the morning, someone's fallen asleep. Mm. A young lady is fallen asleep on it. We don't know much about her. And they light her on fire, and she dies the most horrific death possible. I mean, you can't believe it. And he sits there and watches. Because the cameras were in the subway, you get a picture of his face. He's from Guatemala, crossed over, got in legal trouble in Arizona. I don't know to what scope yet. And then because his picture was out, three high school age guys, were able to identify him, called 911, said, I think I saw this guy in the subway. They stop the subway. Cops get on. Mm-hmm. They corner him into one car, and they pull him off and arrest him. Doesn't stop, can't bring this woman back, who people were able to hit with a fire extinguisher, but not in time. And this is the same time the governor comes out and does some highly edited video of how safe the subway is, which just shows you how screwed up New York is. I mean, hailing the safety of a subway after someone gets burned up alive for sleeping on it.
Yeah, exactly. I want to move on to this one, Brian. Listen to what Democrat Senator John Fetterman said about Donald Trump's political talent. Take a listen.
What was the single biggest factor behind Kamala Harris and Democrats losing in November?
You have a singular political talent. It's undeniable.
Trump.
You know, he had the energy and almost a sense of fearlessness to just say all those kinds of things. I'm not rooting against him. If you're rooting against the president, you are rooting against the nation.
You know what? AOC would never say something like that. It seems Fetterman has become somewhat the voice of reason for the Democrats. What say you?
Over and over again, when you think about being pro-Israel, he knows exactly where he stood. He doesn't care really what anybody else says about him in his party. He laughed at the protesters who were trying to harass him. And it really is on him. So he knows exactly what he thinks. And if you agree, if it's with the people of Pennsylvania, now he agrees he's going to go along with you. And it drives him crazy. He went on to say, I met with Kash Patel. It seemed like a good guy. He goes, I got a chance to hear about his parents. Their immigration story coming here. I met with Pete Hegseth for 30 minutes. I asked him what his objective was. I liked what I heard, but it was only 30 minutes. I want to hear more. And how could people criticize me for meeting and endorsing Elise Stefanik? She's extremely impressive. She has my vote. I wish more Democrats and Republicans were like that, because some people are afraid to say that. Senator Fetterman isn't. I think Trump should reach out to him and say, hey, you know what? Where can we work together? I got a few pieces of legislation coming up. Where can you help me? I want to get to 60 on some of these things. Do you know anybody else that would go along with some of the things that you believe that I believe? And Joe Manchin, somebody else. If the president's got slots open, Joe Manchin has been, for a Democrat, has been open to President Trump. And remember, if it wasn't for him, we'd have two more states. If it wasn't for him, we'd have a packed Supreme Court.
You know, the retiring Joe Manchin said that the Democrat Party is toxic right now, led by a minority progressive group. Is this party ever going to get back to what it used to be?
I don't know, because one of the questions that was put to him was some people in the Democratic Party said if we were more in line with Congresswoman Jayapal and less with Joe Manchin, we would have been more successful. And he laughed. He said, you got to be kidding me. The squad, a member of the squad to win a general election, the squad can't even keep their squad together. They lost two different members this past year in a general election.
Exactly.
Who were primaried. So I think it's a joke.
Exactly. It is indeed. Brian, thank you very much. Brian Kilmeade, and Merry Christmas to you and your listeners.
Thank you, Ashley.
Always appreciate,
appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. 1-866-408-7669. So I think a lot of people are saying to themselves, I don't know what Democrats stand for. Sometimes when Republicans got to recalibrate after John McCain lost, after Mitt Romney lost, at least you know where you stood. You know, people said, I want to be more conservative than John McCain, maybe be a little bit more aggressive than Mitt Romney, but they knew where they stood. They formed the Tea Party. Then they would have the Make America Great Again movement. But for Democrats, just tell me where you stand. I don't know. They don't want to be Joe Manchin, and they don't want to be the squad. So what do you want to be? More like Republicans? I mean, isn't it interesting that Kamala Harris is a lefty that couldn't even get to a primary, ton of money, couldn't organize her staff. But then when it came to the general, she had to run from everything she stood for. Well, why is that? Is that some way Democrats are admitting at the higher up that if we tell people what we stand for, we'll never win? On the other hand, Donald Trump just is himself and it's up to Republicans to follow. And a lot of traditional conservatives like Mitch McConnell and Jeb Bush, Brett Stevens, New York Times columnist, David Brooks, New York Times columnist, weren't buying onto it. George Will. Okay. But you knew where you stood. If you wanted conservatives, you got that. If you wanted moderates, I don't really know. There's not a lot of Republican moderates out there. But when you are Donald Trump, if you think part of the Make America Great Again movement, you know exactly where you stood on everything. Then throw in a little Greenland acquisition. And then you a little bit more when it came to the Panama Canal. Keep in mind, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Perfect gift for this the Christmas is tickets to my show February 15th in Jacksonville, Florida, Florida Theater. BrianKilmeade.com. History, Liberty, Laughs on stage, interacting with you. What could be better than that?
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you from Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country and around the world. 1-866-408-7669. It's Christmas Eve Eve. Watching the president's big speech over the weekend was pretty impactful. Also watching college football playoffs. Round one is now done. Now they go to the bowl game round, and soon we'll have a true national champion. And then everyone will change teams, and we'll have 25-year-old freshmen who, if they don't like their team, they quickly take a red shirt and go out. So we'll see how this goes. I'm glad the guys are making money, but at some point there's got to be a system. Let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We then turned to the bipartisan negotiations. The result of it, a really terrific solution, was killed by irresponsible politics.
It's nothing but lies. Nothing but lies. When his lips are moving, he's lying, and he needs to be held accountable.
I can't argue with that, and that is what happened today. Mayorkas yesterday, Tom Homan this morning, illegal immigration. We have the right man in charge now, and the one that was in charge that led us to the worst illegal immigration problem in our history is now denying and blames Congress, not here.
Number two.
It's important for us to stay calm. House Republicans will be at 220. We'll be at 215. That's the narrowest majority of any party since 1931.
Right. Dems in distress. As some show respect, some urge resistance. He deserves some of that. We're going to look at their status weeks from a new president.
Number one.
If you're rooting against the president, you are rooting against the nation. I'm not ever going to be where I want a president to fail. Country first. I know that's become maybe like a cliche, but it happens to be true.
Yes, it is. And that is Senator John Fetterman, confident, direct, and impressive. In his first major speech since winning the election, we look at President Trump's agenda, known and unknown, something new and something effective, nothing short of transformational. When you talk about the Panama Canal, they're extorting us because we need to get through it. Money's going through the roof. President Trump's not going to take it. And he looked at the strategic location of Greenland. It says it's only 50,000 people there. Denmark has it. I'd like to buy it. Tyrus is going to join us at the bottom of the hour, joining us to discuss this as well as the situation with our armed forces. Is Mark Stevens, retired special mission unit operator and chairman of the board of Task Force Dagger. Mark, welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show.
Brian, appreciate you having me on and the opportunity to share about the foundation today.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. First off, talk about your service.
So I came in when I was 17, right out of high school, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Like a lot of people, you know, I know I probably could have started in college, but I was smart enough to realize that I would have probably messed that up right from the get-go. And I thought going in the service would, you know, be a real help and, you know, help round me out, mature me and all that good stuff. At least I had the wherewithal to recognize that. And so I knew I wanted to go into special operations, and that's where it all started for me. So I spent about 21 plus years in the special operations community. I started out in Army Special Forces and then was recruited and spent about three quarters of my career in a special mission unit and obviously held, you know, different positions there. And then got to serve with some amazing people and be a part of some real strategic events in our history that, you know, affected national policy. So it was an absolute honor and privilege.
So you started serving, but you found out you weren't done, too, when you find out we're going to abandon everyone in Afghanistan, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because of the people that we support in the foundation, the special operations community and their families. You know, we started to see after that a lot of people really, you know, starting to think about all the sacrifice, both physical, mental, and emotional, and the impact it had. And now to kind of be left like that, it kind of stirred up demons and things for people to address. And we had to actually lean in even harder during that period of time, and we still do.
Right. I mean, think about it. You fight for 20 years, you know, friends that have lost their lives are never the same, lost limbs. And then all of a sudden someone said, well, the war wasn't really worth it. We're just leaving. And then we have 13 die on the way out and countless wounded. And then we did leave a lot of people behind. And I think the president got a total pass on that.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, speaking from, you know, my own personal experiences there, and then obviously the people that we support, there's a clear difference between the political world and the folks on the ground. And I had that same experience in Somalia back in 93. I was involved in that entire deployment and battle, and it was a very similar situation where, you know, the politics drove an outcome, but us on the ground had a very different perspective and were impacted differently. And that led to, well, a lot of people don't realize that actually led to 9/11, which opened the door for bin Laden and his perception of how we would handle things. And I think that directly translates to that, too, because it opens up the door on how we're going to be seen and react to things.
Very interesting, because of that, you could say it's linked to other operations like Ukraine and maybe October 7th with Israel's experiencing now. But they're actually feeling the wrath of that. And bin Laden felt the wrath of their miscalculation, in my view. So, Mark, how did it lead to you become chairman of the board of Task Force Dagger?
Well, you know, when I got, well, while I was in, I got wounded a number of times, probably more than most. But at the same time, I will tell you that I walked away with all my fingers and toes and felt very fortunate. And I can probably point to three situations that, and I'm not the only one, but for me, I can point to three situations where I can't explain how I walked away. You know, for all intents and purposes, I shouldn't have, but I did. And I always struggled with that, you know, the survivor's guilt and the why and all that. And I really found purpose. I was introduced to the organization. One of the founding members was a guy that I served with on a sniper team. And he explained to me, you know, what the organization was doing and the gaps that they were filling for the community. And it just made perfect sense. So I started volunteering. And that led to being asked to be on the board. And then ultimately I was asked and to be the chairman. And I took that ask and that responsibility very seriously. And I've worked very hard to, you know, professionalize and bring this organization where it is today to be able to do what a benevolent organization is supposed to do. You know, it fills gaps. It helps people. It should be transparent. And, you know, answer back to the donors exactly, you know, what we say we do in our mission statement. That's kind of how I got there and what I've done while being there.
Yeah. So right now with the special ops and what their needs are, multiple deployments, can't really talk about it. A lot of it top secret, and don't show weakness. You think you're a step above. So therefore, maybe you guys keep things locked up more than most.
You nailed it. I will tell you that the pace of special operations, I don't think people really realize this. I know, you know, we've seen what we know is the war after 9/11 and all the things we do has kind of changed or come to a kind of a closure from a conventional standpoint. But I will tell you that SOF, for special operations, it hasn't changed. They have been and continue to be thousands deployed in, you know, plus or minus 100 countries at any given time. And that recurring deployment, and there's not that many of us. And so that recurring deployment pace takes its toll, not only on the individual, but the family. And I think that gets lost a lot of times. And a lot of these places we're at today, you know, they are still combat zones. They're very hazardous areas. But the other areas where we may be doing geopolitical type activities or just having a presence can quickly turn bad as well. So that stress repetitively creates major problems within the family unit, you know, both physically, emotionally, and mentally. And so you've got to figure out, how do I, one, make it better for them, keep them in the fight longer, but at the same time, how do I set them up for success post-career? And that's kind of the things that we jumped on from a gap-filling standpoint.
Understood. So if people want to help out right now, where would they go?
So they would go to taskforcedagger.org, and there's ways to donate. And you can obviously learn more about the organization. But, I mean, I'd like to highlight our missions are immediate needs, health initiatives, and rehabilitative adaptive events. Those are the only three things we do. There's a lot of organizations out there doing good things, but I will tell you, we're kind of at the forefront of the things that we do, and we've kind of led the way, especially on the health side, of creating these pipelines to get people, you know, in these care pipelines, and created these different relationships with providers to get that done.
Understood. So now we have to do a situation where got to handle the people that fought before, and we got to get quality people in to fight the next war, or be strong enough so we don't have to fight another war. Here's what Trump said about Pete Hegseth yesterday. Cut eight.
But to get wokeness out of our military and restore the unquestioned strength and fighting spirit of the American Armed Forces, I have appointed Pete Hegseth to be our next Secretary of Defense. He's going to be great. It just seems so natural to me. Plus, he had a great education, went to Princeton and Harvard, was a tremendous student, and he's a very vibrant, strong guy. I think he's going to be great. He's doing well.
So one thing that, you know, anecdotally, people are already signing up. I know legacy families that were so upset about the way, and who wasn't, about the way Afghanistan, the disrespect shown, they said they were encouraging their kids not to get in. I get the sense Pete gets his job, and I think he will. I get the sense that since he's going to be so clearly for the fighter, the war fighter, that that's going to help recruiting. What do you think?
I absolutely agree 100%. I mean, you know, not to get into the political space, but I will tell you that the military is not the place for social experiments. There's one role for the military. It's to protect our country, and if you have to go to war, it's to go to war and win that war. It's not always pretty, and we have people that walk away from it. You know, they're scarred, they're damaged, they have demons, and we have to lean in to be able to fix it. But to answer your question, I absolutely agree. We need to create the environment where people that would probably have not chosen to serve will now serve, because we need those people. We don't, you know, attrition cannot allow the wrong people to elevate within the commands to promote that. So we really do have to change the culture, which ultimately gets back to what we do in the foundation, because we're going to get support from the Secretary of Defense, the Defense Department, like we currently do, but not the same way. So I see, you know, I see a game-changing thing. I mean, we work with the Special Operations Command hand-in-hand with the Warrior Care Program, which is their entity that bridges that gap between the government and a benevolent organization. And so, you know, I see that even getting better and more focus on the warfighter, the issues. Because at the end of the day, if you look at it from a business case, a commander, I keep my people in the fight longer, so there's my ROI. But at the same time, you know, because you're affecting the family, because, you know, I can speak personally to this. When I deployed, you know, in the back of your mind is your family. You know, they say forget it while you're downrange, but you can't. It's, you know, you need to know that you have a stable base that they're taken care of and they're good. And that puts you in the mindset you need to be in while you're facing the enemy.
Absolutely. So, Mark Stevens, thanks so much for what you did. Thanks so much for what you're doing. Chairman of the Board of Task Force Stagger. And people can go and find out more at TFDaggerFDN. Mark, have a great Christmas.
Brian, I appreciate it. And before you let me go, we have an event, an adaptive event down in Key West. Brian Mass attended it this year and would love to have you attend. It would be great so you can get a even a better perspective on the things that we're doing. I think you'll see how important it really is.
All right, I'll stay on top of that, and we'll see if we can work that out this year, if not next. Thanks, Mark.
You got it. Thank you.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Bottom of the hour, Tyrus. I also want to look over the big non-controversy that Democrats are jumping all over, and that's the Musk-Trump relationship. I'll bring some perspective with it in just a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We will create the new Department of Government Efficiency, headed by Elon Musk. And no, he's not taking the presidency. I like having smart people. You know, they're on a new kick. Russia, 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 Ukraine, 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 all the different hoaxes. And the new one is President Trump has ceded the presidency to Elon Musk. No, no, that's not happening.
So the president had some fun yesterday in Phoenix when he was at the big Charlie Kirk event, first time, spoke for a while in front of thousands of people. But Musk and President Trump were blowing up the deal last week. There would have been a continuing resolution, got them to March to fund the government to that time. It was over 1,500 pages. It went back in. It was over 100. And then it got signed. But the President Trump was not happy because it didn't include the removal of the debt ceiling, which is going to be another negotiating wedge. Okay. Understood. Elon Musk got out in front of it and tweeted first and said, we should not sign off on this. Nobody should sign off on this. Why? That's the key. Elon Musk is not there to get in front of Trump or get behind Trump, but he's in charge of DOGE, government efficiency, DOGE. And when he saw how much money was going into that, he thought was unnecessary, he weighed in on it. Well, would I have done it the way he did it right in the morning and then had hundreds of tweets to follow up, retweets and original postings? No. And then Trump, hours later, would come out. They just got to get on the same page. This was an important dry run of how they're going to work together in the future. But the difference between Musk and other people that were tight with Trump and drift from Trump, like Rice Priebus or General Kelly, is that Elon Musk got a unique skill set. It's exactly what his administration needs. He does not want to be president. And they're not going to be a rift, but they should communicate better about what it means for Johnson. Here's what Rachel Bade said. Cut 30.
In a lot of ways, I feel like President Trump was sort of asking for the impossible in this situation. I mean, there's been a lot of hot takes out there that he in some way has lost his juice with Republicans or his sway with the party. I don't buy that, and I'll tell you why. I mean, if you look at debt ceiling votes historically, this is a toxic vote for Republicans, especially when you're trying to raise the debt ceiling without corresponding spending cuts or really any spending cuts whatsoever. And I went back and looked at a lot of the votes on the debt ceiling in past years, even when President Trump was president before, and way more Republicans opposed it. I'm talking about in the hundreds, up to 200 at one point. And so I'm surprised that only 38 Republicans actually opposed this.
I agree. I absolutely agree. There's no breakdown of communication between Johnson and Trump, but they could have maybe brief Trump more specifically about what was included in there. And I don't think Trump made it clear to them the debt ceiling being out of it was going to be key or being in it. So the problem is why I don't think Donald Trump is going to take on the speaker and said he should be ousted. He'll back him is because he's got to get his election certified. And if there's no speaker when they vote on January 3rd, they're not going to gavel him in on January 8th, which is going to delay everything. And we remember last time we tried to get a speaker as a country.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
How did you convince Hezbollah to buy this?
Well, obviously, they didn't know that they were buying it from Israel.
Who did they buy it from, or think they were buying it from?
We have an incredible array of possibilities of creating foreign companies that have no way being traced back to Israel. shell companies over shell companies who affect the supply chain to our favor. We create a pretend world. We are a global production company. We write the screenplay. We're the directors. We're the producers. We're the main actors. The world is our stage.
Pretty amazing. The breakdown using fake voices and back drop shadow. You can sell who the Mossad agents were talking about, but they've talked about advertising for the pagers, hoping and selling under the different guise because they didn't want to be tracked on their cell phones. So they thought pagers would be something that Hezbollah would be interested in, and they got it. And how they ended up blowing them up, and they had to have an alert that said basically hit a certain button at a certain time to stop the buzzing, and they would. And how they eventually got them. And all these guys that got blown up went to the hospital. So you immediately knew whoever had that pager was Hezbollah. And number two, whoever got wounded was reporting to the hospital. So you even had names on top of that. Then you could see, they said, how defeated Nasrallah looked when he hopped on television. Saw thousands of Hezbollah fighters who was dressed as civilians in many cases, just blown up and exposed. And then little did they know, Nasrallah would know that he'd be dead a couple of days later. They decapitated almost the whole organization. This is something that would be in a James Bond movie. Cut 38.
In order to put explosives inside, but not too much. Using dummies, Mossad conducted tests with the pager in a padded glove to calibrate the grams of explosive needed to be just enough to hurt the fighter, but not the person next to him.
If we push the button, the only one that will get injured is the terrorist himself. Even if his wife or his daughter will be just next to him, he's the only one that's going to be harmed.
Did you test for that?
Yes. We test everything triple, double, multiple times in order to make sure there's minimum damage.
Because they want to make sure the people holding the pager got blown up, but not people in the vicinity. There are some situations where the pager was ringing and maybe a kid was handing the pager to their parent and got blown up. And that's, of course, sad, but it's rare. I mean, basically, it was genius to line up all these Hezbollah fighters, have them buy pagers, and their marketing was so good. Other people were trying to buy it from them because they were making dummy. They said they were an expert at advertising. And they were making dummy corporations that were attractive to people that didn't want to be tracked in cell phones. You know, a lot of people use flip phones, not because they can't afford another phone, but because they don't want to be tracked. And that's what terrorists don't want to be tracked. So it was absolutely brilliant. But overall, I watched over the weekend as Jake Sullivan talked about the foreign policy of the Biden administration, how they've set up the Trump team for success. But it was moves like that that blew up Hezbollah. It was ignoring Biden when they said, don't go into Rafah, went in anyway, and they wiped out everybody, including Sinwar and all the higher ups in Hamas. And it was ignoring Biden when he said, we're going to continue to pound Hezbollah and kill Nasrallah, even though Biden told him not to. And because of that, that stopped Hezbollah from being able to have the wherewithal to fight in Syria. That caused the collapse of Assad's regime, which lost Iran a key ally and a land bridge that the Russians were using, that Iran was using to get the bad guys arms and weapons. So it all worked out despite what Joe Biden was urging. And I do say Jake Sullivan deserves some credit. Cut 36.
If you're Iran right now and you're looking around at the fact that your conventional capability has been reduced, your proxies have been reduced, your main client state has been eliminated, Assad has fallen, it's no wonder there are voices saying, hey, maybe we need to go for a nuclear weapon right now. It's a risk that I'm personally briefing the incoming team on, and it's something that is the consequence, not of Iranian strength, but of Iranian weakness.
Yeah. And you, what did you do with Iran? You told them to get back in the nuclear deal, gave them multiple incentives to do it. They ignored you. You didn't enforce sanctions. You allowed them to sell their oil to China, pennies on the dollar. You don't really fine them or make them pay the price for giving Russia this latest drones, Shahed drones, that are doing such damage against Ukraine. But now you have a diminished Iran because Israel went ahead and blew up the air defense and so much more and actually set back their nuclear program. So that's one thing that's going on. The other big story, as I was mentioning before, was what's happening between Musk and Trump. And the only thing that I take away from this is that, you know, Chris Christie came out and said after a few months of being close to people and talking to them constantly, and Christie says he was one of those guys, and Reince Priebus was another one of those guys, and General Kelly was another one of those guys, he gets sick and he moves on. But I don't think it's going to happen with Elon Musk, because not only that, he's a prolific donor. He's going to be all over the midterms to expand their advantage in the House and Senate. He's going to push their programs. But this guy's got one in a generational type knowledge and experience on manufacturing, on technology, on space travel, on satellite technology, on electric cars, on international trade. So he needs these things. This isn't a guy that just likes hanging out with Trump. You know, he basically moved into Mar-a-Lago, and I know he gets hot and cold on certain things, but he likes, I think what he likes, when you saw how happy and overrun with joy Musk was in front of a crowd, it was something that can't be replicated. When he's shooting rockets in Marshall Islands, when he's having Starlink look up and see a rocket go into space and we're able to go off to the space station and back, yeah, it's great. And to be able to land on a pad in the middle of the ocean, that's fantastic for me and you. But for him, what he didn't have was 25,000 people chanting his name. What he didn't have is this unique push to power and the loyalty. What he didn't have is the loyalty that the Trump crowd has now towards him. And what they feel towards Trump, they feel towards Musk. And that's why he jumped in, hook, line, and sinker. Not because he's a Republican, because he's an American and happy to do it. We come back. Tyrus joins us, 1-866-408-7669. We'll talk to him in a second. And also want to talk a little bit about what Democrats are doing now. There's a group out there that wants to resist, that's urging the civil service employees, don't leave just because Trump's in. Stay in and fight. I think that's folly, and I'll explain.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
As far as Governor Hochul, shame on her. She supports sanctuary status in that state. She welcomed thousands of illegal aliens to her state. She sent them to Buffalo and Syracuse. Murders were occurred by illegal aliens in Buffalo and Syracuse. She has a green light law. ICE and CBP can't even work with local law enforcement. Local law enforcement can't even share DMV data with these people. So, Governor Hochul, shame on you. There's nothing you can say that's going to make this right in New York.
So what happened is over the weekend on Sunday morning, about 7:30, a woman was nodding off on the subway. Don't know much about her, which is odd. And then this Guatemalan illegal immigrant set her off on fire. I don't know what she was wearing. I don't know if she put liquid on her first, but she died the most horrific death imaginable. And guess what? Because of the cameras that were on board, they were able to get a clean shot of his picture. Three high school age young men were able to turn him in, called 911. They were able to trap him in a car, shut down the subway, and some brave transit cops took this guy into custody. What we just found out about this Guatemalan is that the DHS reported the suspect was arrested by the NYPD, but he's told now, Bill Malusian, that he was arrested by Border Patrol on June 1st, 2018, after he crossed illegally into Arizona and was deported by the Trump administration just days later on June 7th, 2018. He then reentered the U.S. illegally as a gotaway and an unknown time and location, as the DHS has found no record of him entering again. He does have an arrest in Arizona. I don't have details. And then he does something horrific like this. My sense, he's got a trail of transgressions behind him. Illegal immigrant, and that Governor Hochul comes out that later on the afternoon about how she's working hard to make the subway safer. And with the National Guard has made him safer than ever. I mean, who's in their communication shop? What knucklehead put that out? And how has not that been walked back yet? Tyrus joins us now, getting set to host the Gutfeld Show tonight. Tyrus, welcome back, and your thoughts about what we now know about what happened Sunday in the subway.
I mean, I don't even think you could quite. You did a great job of trying to paint a picture of what is considerably one of the worst ways a person can die. Luckily, Mother Nature does shut off, from what I understand, from researching the feelings after a little while, but the fear and terror, I think you're right until the lights shut out, you know that you're burning alive. So just think about that. And the fact that it never should have happened. And again, the unaffected, especially the virtue signaling left, how she could be, but not just this, but just in general, her laissez-faire attitude towards criminals and the citizens of New York, and seems to spend more time making excuses than actually protecting the people of New York. I don't understand this. Where's the outrage? It doesn't seem, every person that I've known that I come around, regardless of how they vote or how their religion is just complete outrage and disgust. Again, it just goes back to, our women and children are not safe in this country right now. And unfortunately, it's going to take a lot more than ICE. It's going to take everyday citizens reporting what they see, supporting law enforcement. I like where Mayor Adams' head is at in this game, where he just wants to keep get his streets clean and his people safe.
Do you believe him?
Yeah, I do, wholeheartedly. And the reason why I do is that he understands that even by saying these words, that he will not be reelected as a Democrat in New York City. He's putting his political career away to do what he was meant to do and be a policeman and protect the city of New York. I will be shocked and truly devastated if he was to succumb to politics. But I think he knows what his mission is, and hopefully more politicians will think more about getting reelected and getting our cities safe, especially our big cities.
So Matt Gaetz's ethics report just came out, and it's ugly. But before I get to that, talk about ugly. HHS Secretary Homeland, biggest failure yet. Alejandro Mayorkas tried to justify his legacy yesterday on Face the Nation. And he says the reason why the border was open, politics. Cut 23.
We then turned to Congress, and we asked for supplemental funding that was desperately needed to make our administration of a broken immigration system work much better.
Mm-hmm.
We were denied. We then turned to the bipartisan negotiations, which proved successful, which were then killed. The result of it, a really terrific solution, was killed by irresponsible politics.
Right. He blames politics instead of just enforcing the laws that he had. Do you think, Tyrus, this was intentional? I mean, do you think anyone could be that incompetent for 4 years?
Yeah, he's complacent. I think it was the plan. Let's stop kidding ourselves. This entire administration had an opportunity for individuals to run their agendas who are not elected because Biden was unfit to serve. I think we know that more than ever. But to come out and say that he did all he can. Listen, I think you and I are two cut from the same cloth, Brian, although my cloth is significantly a bigger towel. If we could not do a job, if we were unable to do a job, we would say that I can't get this done. I'm going to step down and hopefully somebody else can get in here because what's happening is terrible. And I would out every person that was standing in my way. The fact that he has not only kept the job, he's doubled down on it. He's celebrated himself. He's goes out and he's got plenty. And that's another thing. He's got so much time for interviews because he's not doing the job. And that has basically been the entire horrible legacy of this administration is they didn't do the job. They DEI'd the White House. And we are all suffering because of it. And for him to sit there and say it's politics, shame on him. I mean, he's already disgraced for his behavior towards those brave men and women who were riding the horses. And he tried to he did. He successfully had the president of the United States condemn them. He condemned them. Right. There was never an apology. There was suspensions. Their families were humiliated. That's just the tip of the iceberg. He has absolutely – I don't know how he sleeps tonight, B. I really don't.
So the ethics investigation on Gaetz no longer in Congress came out, even though that's not typical. They say some of the things in the report from 2017 to 2020, Gaetz paid women for engaging in sex. 2017, he engaged with a 17-year-old. They say Gaetz used or possessed illegal drugs. He accepted gifts, including transportation, lodging, connection with a trip to the Bahamas. He also arranged for his chief of staff to assist a woman with engaging in sexual activity, obtaining a passport, and he knowingly and willfully sought to impede and obstruct the committee's investigation. Some of the highlights. I mean, does he keep his TV job when this comes out? If you're Gates, do you fight this? What do you do?
I think he just needs to go away. But I also think it. I don't think he's a. This is a lone character. I think this is the behavior in politics. I think since he is outed, I think the right thing for him to do is to talk about the environment up there, what they do on the norm up there, because this was obviously being done in broad daylight with other senators around, with other House members around. And it seems the corruption is not just on the left, it's on the right. I think he's one of many, and he should not serve. If you want to watch him on TV, that's your business. again, it's not. I probably would not. Allegations need to be proven. Everyone should be heard. If there was a criminal, you know, and he's going to face trial or something like that, then he's convicted of something like that, then he probably shouldn't be on TV.
Yeah, I mean, the FBI passed on it. Lastly, Tyrus, Greenland, 50,000 people, huge land mass, mostly ice. President Trump wants it. My prediction is he gets it. Are you also predicting he gets it from Denmark? And what do we do with it? How soon do we go? Do we get a Greenland Bureau?
I think, well, first of all, why not? It's way better than that in Canada as a 51st state, I'll tell you that much. I like it. I think the first thing we do is that it'll give us a good indication of how the climate's actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really good, it's got some of the world's oldest sharks swimming around out there. There's a lot of natural resources out there.
Yep.
And I think, you know, it's a good place to send, you know, Gutfeld.
Absolutely. You know, on vacation.
Yeah, get him a tent, a microphone, and every once in a while he can check in and then let us know how it's going.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to send Trey Yinks there. Gutfeld can do a lot of the hard reporting.
He can do that, yeah.
Right.
He's been, you know, he's been on maternity leave for 2 years.
I know. What's with that?
He can do his, yeah.
It's unbelievable. So listen, we are happy for him, and we're happy you're going to be hosting Gutfeld tonight.
Yeah, I'm on tonight and the 5.
All right. I'll see you on the 5, Tyrus.
All right, sir.
All right. Tyrus and I will be on the 5 and 3 other very important people, and then I'm doing Jesse tonight, too.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Victims or Villains?
Lyle and Eric Menendez were motivated by greed.
Others have called the brothers arrogant and spoiled.
The reason behind this was financial gain.
Or so it seemed.
These two brothers should be out of prison by now.
I don't see how the years of sexual, physical, and mental abuse amount to life without parole.
Listen and follow starting January 7th at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.